Hi and welcome to the Pareto Pod, the program where we in Pareto sit down and discuss hot topics in today's market. And a few topics are hotter right now than oil. It is, of course, the world's most traded commodity. It's also been called the lifeblood of the world economy. It's a source of great wealth for some countries and as such an important to the investment community. But it is a net cost for most of the rest of the world, of course. So higher prices for oil means higher prices for energy, which is a tax on the economy. And as you probably noticed by now, we'll do this podcast in English this time. And that is because I will introduce our new oil analyst here at Pareto, Nadia Martin-Wiggin. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And you are from the US originally, so...
Yes, I'm American-Canadian, and I started in the oil industry in 2007, working as an analyst for Morgan Stanley on their commodities trading floor in London. I then, after 2 years at Morgan Stanley, I worked for a oil company called Fibro, where I was a prop trader, proprietary trader.
So you were trading oil contracts all day then?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 6 years, and now I have moved to Norway 3 years ago, and I was the head of the markets team at Rystad Energy, where I covered oil, gas, and renewables. Mm. So I'm very excited to be at Pareto now and discuss all the developments in the oil market we see this week before OPEC has a huge meeting.
Yeah, so this is kind of also our pre-OPEC meeting podcast. So we'll discuss that a little bit later, because now we have, you know, two distinct scenarios, at least, to discuss to see how the price will go further, at least for the supply side of it. But let's move a little bit back and talk about the little bit longer lines in oil and talk about the demand development. What's your take on that?
Well, I think demand has really strengthened since we saw the oil price collapse in 2014. We saw demand start to increase each year going forward, and with an oil price, that is expected. Now, what many forecasters, including the International Energy Agency and OPEC themselves, have underestimated is how much demand can grow and strengthen, even as the price has strengthened over since the second half of last year. So we're hearing a lot, even from President Putin, talking about demand destruction. But when we look at the actual facts and the numbers, we see that demand has been growing. And the most recent data now that we have from a factual side is the first quarter demand numbers globally. And that is where the IEA, the International Energy Agency, has admitted that demand is 2 million barrels per day year-on-year growth. To give you perspective, in January this year, they predicted that demand would grow in the first quarter by 1.1 million barrels per day.
So what we see is actually almost twice the expected demand growth year-over-year.
Exactly, while the price has been quite strong versus where we were at this point last year.
Where do the demand come from? Is it any particular areas where we see more than robust growth?
Yes, the US is leading the way right now, and they have very low unemployment, 3.8% unemployment. And we've seen in the last week that we've hit nearly record gasoline demand now at the start of the driving season. We've had distillate demand remain very strong in the US. First, it was led by a cold winter. Now we see actual industry growth. A lot of the trucking industry is at capacity. So that is driving the continued distillate growth. We've had distillate growth in demand globally, in Europe, in China, especially.
The distillate, that's gasoline, diesel, etc.
Gas oil and diesel and heating oil, exactly. India has also been very important. India had a demand collapse last year because they demonetized their currency.
Yeah.
India's come back very strongly. They posted 7.7% GDP growth in the first quarter. So they are on track. Of course, they are an emerging market. So there is a lot of concern that as the oil price gets higher, it's very difficult for their consumers who are paying in rupees for the oil. But the Indian government has actually said in the last week that they are contemplating lowering taxes from the 40 to 50% of retail costs that they currently have. This is very interesting because a lot of the assumptions among analysts was that in this price downturn, we've had a lot of the subsidies that used to exist for consumers in emerging markets be taken away.
Yeah.
And now these governments are talking about bringing back subsidies. So Turkey has already lowered the taxes. Russia is lowering the taxes on gasoline and diesel consumption effective the 1st of July. Brazil has lowered diesel prices. Indonesia has frozen prices through 2019. And Argentina is also lowering, flattening the diesel and gasoline prices. So that's a lot of emerging economies that are actually being helped by their governments to maintain demand growth.
How about China in all this?
So China has not taken policies to help consumers buy products. However, they have the spare capacity amongst refineries in the world. So when we look at what is happening in the US, for example, the gasoline price is getting higher because we have a lot of end user demand. But the refineries are already running at 95, 96% of their capacity. The spare capacity is sitting in China. And China has increased the import quotas for crude so that the refineries can actually run a higher percentage of their capacity than they were legally allowed to do in the previous year. So for independent refiners, their current quotas are 63% higher than they were last year. Now, what we have seen is despite this increase in production of gasoline and distillate, we have not seen exports increase, and we've seen actual demand continue to grow in China. Now, my expectation is that some of this additional product will eventually be going into storage, but we don't have the evidence of that yet. So for right now, China looks to be doing very well.
And I even heard talk actually about the markets considered very mature, like the European one has been surprising on the upside when it comes to demand growth as well.
Yes, when you look from a purely mathematical perspective in terms of GDP forecasting and what we see happening in terms of electric vehicle substitution, every model will show you that demand is contracting in Europe. In the last 3 years, we've actually seen flat demand growth year on year. So it's been growing every year at the same rate. And that is not what the models would show you.
Mm-hmm. So in sum, the demand looks very robust and has been surprising on the upside compared to initial estimates. But where do we see it go from for the rest of the year? Has these organizations learned anything?
Well, the International Energy Agency has still been stubborn, and they have not revised higher their second, third, and fourth quarter forecasts for this year, despite the first quarter outperforming. We ourselves are forecasting demand to grow at 1.8 million barrels per day for the year. That's slightly lower than the first quarter, but that has to do with seasonality. We expect demand to come down a bit now in the second quarter as we've had refinery maintenance, but then in the third quarter, it jumps again. Mm-hmm. And then going into next year, we see slightly slower year-on-year growth at around 1.7 million barrels per day, but that is because we expect prices to stay stable in this higher range.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that turns out. But one of the things that's been a lot of talk about is the storage situation. And one of them has been talking about the five-year moving average, or I guess that's one of the measures that OPEC has been watching when it comes to their production quotas. What's the situation there now?
So we can see that it has come down to actually the five-year average as of March.
Global stocks.
Yes, global stocks. Mm-hmm. Global OECD stocks, because those are the ones that are the most visible.
Yeah.
And that was the target that they spoke about. So that was reached in March. And then in April, we continued to see stock draws. And that is countercyclical. In the second quarter of the year, we normally have stock builds because the world is preparing for driving season in the U.S., for hotter weather in the Middle East, to run air conditioning. And so we've continued to draw down, and we're now only 55 million barrels above the 10-year average in terms of stock builds. So we another way to look at OECD stocks is to think in terms of days of demand cover.
Yeah.
So how many days of everyday demand can we handle based on what is in storage? And this is where the market actually gets very exciting, because where we have drawn down to in 2018, the market looks very much like it did in 2013. And we're in terms of actual days of demand cover, we're at around 29 and a half days of demand cover. And that market, based on our forecast, will continue to tighten. And so through next year, we see that the days of demand cover will fall to 28 days. Now, that is as low as it got at the start of 2014 when oil prices were skyrocketing.
Can this be called uncomfortably small storage?
It is uncomfortably small when we start to think about spare capacity that exists right now. So, and when we start to think about what OPEC is planning to do going forward, you know, in terms of immediate spare capacity available, say in the next couple of months, probably 600,000 barrels per day of additional production can come online. But then OPEC is talking about raising production 1 million to 1.5 million barrels per day very quickly, then we would not really have the spare capacity. And that is where it gets more complicated and dangerous for the market when we have outages like we have been experiencing in the last couple of weeks in Libya and Nigeria.
Yeah. So the demand looks robust and strong. It's been surprising on the upside. The storages has come down to 5-year average and are heading lower. So there seems to be a logical implication here that more oil, more production is needed. And that's where that brings us to the kind of the current situation and the things that are being discussed in OPEC. Can you give us a quick take on that one?
Absolutely. So OPEC had agreed to maintain production cuts through the end of this year. If they do that, then the market will be even tighter than what I've been talking about in terms of days of demand cover and continuing to draw stocks through the end of the year. Now, we expect, even if OPEC were to ramp up production up to 600,000 barrels per day, we will still have a drawing second half of the year. So stocks will continue to go down.
Even with higher OPEC production.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's up to, as of the latest that they've discussed this afternoon, they were talking about 300,000 to 600,000 barrels per day of additional production. Why that number? I think because that is a very quick number for them to fulfill. They can do that within 3 months. Now,
yeah, because I want to expand a little bit on that one, because one has to remember, listening to this podcast, that if they decide to increase production, an interesting question is how fast can they really bring new oil into the market? And what's your estimate for that one?
Yeah, so very quickly they can bring around 600,000 barrels per day of additional production. But part of it is because they're already planning to increase production, because we are heading into the main demand season in the Middle East. So naturally, all Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, they increase production a little bit now. But then the question is whether they lower it back down again, you know, to fulfill the original agreement in the fourth quarter. So it's very easy for them to lift that. The Russian oil companies have already started to increase production by around 100,000 barrels per day to test how quickly they can do it. So they also have some spare capacity. And that's where I think they can bring up around 300,000 barrels per day. So by year end, our view at Pareto is that we can see 1 million barrels per day of additional production to come online. We differ from the IEA. They think 1.1 million barrels per day can be brought online. However, they don't actually forecast OPEC production, so I'm not certain how they come up with that number. Maybe they already have a lower number in terms of what is expected to be produced. When we think about next year, however, the neutral zone, which is shared between Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and it has been dormant for a few years now,
mm-hmm.
that can probably ramp up 250,000 barrels per day quite quickly starting next year, so say by the end of the first quarter, and then reach up to 500,000 barrels per day in the coming months. But to really jump from the OPEC producers from 600,000 barrels per day, the original number I was talking about, there's we need to see rig counts go up. There actually has to be some activity going forward.
Yeah, because it's just not to turn a knob and then like in a bathtub and then more oil flows. It's not that way.
Exactly. And especially because Saudi Arabia initially, when OPEC put in the cut agreement, they drew down a lot of storage. Mm-hmm. So they don't have that much in storage. That is assuming that the Saudi Arabia-Russian side of the argument wins. We have Iran, Venezuela, and Iraq that are opposing any kind of production increase as of this meeting. So it will be interesting.
Yeah, what we hear in the media right now is a lot of jockeying for positions before the OPEC meeting. And but I guess in the end, it will be what Saudi Arabia and Russia decides to do, I guess.
Yes,
what?
But I think that Saudi Arabia, you know, they are in a very important position right now strategically, because when they first, when OPEC first decided not to cut production when the oil price was coming down in 2014, and
mm-hmm.
you know, Iran and a lot of these countries were begging them to, and Russia was begging them to cut production, and they went for market share. A lot of the world thought that the role of OPEC was no longer important and that they didn't have control of the market. And then since they've agreed to these cuts, OPEC has really, and Saudi Arabia has really been on top of the world and in control of the market. And they have their IPO of Saudi Aramco coming forward next year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main attractive points about Saudi Aramco is that if you're invested in Saudi Aramco, you will have a view of how the oil market is, because they can control the market a bit. So I think that it would be very tough for Saudi Arabia to just say we're going it alone with Russia
mm-hmm.
and just start cheating in their own agreement. I think they will really try to reach some kind of consensus with the other producers. I think that's why they've brought down the number in the latest discussions from the initial 1 million or 1.1 million that the Russians wanted, to find something that is more agreeable to more of the members. Another point is that Saudi Arabia has been over-complying, actually, to the cuts by around 100,000 barrels per day.
Yeah.
So that is something that they will, of course, stop doing immediately in this situation.
So they try to, it's a difficult thing to maneuver in politically right now, but I guess the non-OPEC members of this agreement, Russia, for instance, they could more easily and on their own decide to increase production again.
Well, the Kazakhstan is another country that also has been increasing production and been cheating a bit more or a lot more than any other producer, because they don't feel as tied to it. However, I still think that Russia wouldn't really like to go it alone either, because they're finally in the club.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, they were struggling already in 2013. Because of sanctions against them. And then by 2014, they were in a truly desperate situation. And I think now we have a very good rapport between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and I think they would like to maintain that.
Mm. So what's the most likely scenario then? We will see, I guess, some oil coming into the market, some more oil, just to, you know, silence the worst of the critics. But it doesn't feel like you really believe in, you know, another million barrels a day coming to the market very soon.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a very tough sell. However, if that were to happen, you know, 1 million, 1 million plus, the market, I think, will come down a little bit in price. However, as we started off our conversation, demand is the most important point, and then it will strengthen. And I think actually a lot of the trading community is just waiting for the opportunity to get into the oil market.
Yeah, I think thinking as a trader, a former trader myself, I think the news would send the oil price down perhaps $5-$10, and then again it will find some natural support there and start going higher, because there really is not more quick oil coming for the market. And I guess the demand numbers have been surprising on the upside, and where shall not this year's oil, but next year's oil and the next year thereafter, where can that oil come from?
Well, one point that we actually haven't discussed yet is the shale side.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of concerns were, that shale would just jump exponentially, endlessly.
U.S. And oil production.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, shale coming from the U.S. And they have actually had a lot of bottlenecks. So even though production has jumped and activity has jumped and rig counts have jumped, we haven't seen as much of that oil come onto the market internationally as one would have expected at the start of this year, when we are in this $75 Brent price range. So we can see that even the US market cannot instantly supply all of this demand. Mm-hmm. However, by the second half of next year, a lot of those bottlenecks will be resolved. And that's where we see U.S. production really jumping and reaching around 12.4 million barrels per day.
Which will make them the largest oil producer in the world.
Exactly. And that's crude and condensate only. So, yes, it will make
them...
Not counting gas. Our NGLs. So that is another aspect that OPEC needs to take under advisement. And that's why they are also thinking about how much price strength do they actually want to see going forward. I think that is a concern in the back of Saudi Arabia's mind, absolutely, and why they want to keep things a bit calmer. And that's where the up to 600,000 barrels per day increased production is reasonable.
So to sum this up, the oil price has reached what one might consider at a comfortable level, at least for investors in Norway and for the oil companies when they are making their budgets for next year, exploration, development, etc. And it's very hard, I think, to see that the oil price, you know, coming markedly down from this level again.
Right. Yes, I mean, we have come down nearly $8 on the Brent price since Trump announced that he would be reimposing the Iranian sanctions. That's quite a big difference. It was for 8 weeks that the speculators were exiting the crude oil market. And then in this last week, we finally have seen the speculating community come back into the market. So I think the market is not overly long before this OPEC decision. So we don't need to see that side come down so much further. And I think that the E&P community actually has been quite slow to accept this new price paradigm that we're in, and they are still thinking in terms of much lower oil prices. So I think that we see more upside ahead as a result of that, as the world becomes more comfortable in this higher range.
Yes, because budgets for offshore exploration and production has not really started to come up again.
No, not yet. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see at our conference this fall to see what they say about next year. But to sum it up here at the end, you have started in Pareto a few weeks back, and we have not published any official price estimates yet. And I guess that's because actually of this uncertainty around the OPEC meeting. So we are waiting to see how that decision will be.
Exactly. So we'll publish that next week once we know what they have decided, because, of course, price additional price strength now we expect would have a positive influence and effect on the E&P companies, which will stimulate more investment, more final investment decisions, which will then stimulate more production in the coming 18 months. And then that will create additional supply for us to then consider in terms of our long-term balances and also look at the potential cost inflation, because we have seen a lot of cost inflation in shale already since last year, around 7% year-on-year cost inflation last year, then around 10% this year, most probably. Whereas in the offshore space, we've still seen cost deflation because of the lack of activity. And so that is what we need to pinpoint when that tide has turned.
So offshore's relative competitive position is actually being a bit better now.
Absolutely.
Mm. So I guess we can expect to see some increased investments there going forward as well.
Yes, that is what we expect.
Very good. Thank you very much, Nadia. If our listeners want to access more of your analysis, I guess they can find it on our website.
Absolutely. All our published commentaries.
Yeah. Thank you very much, then. Have a nice day.